When you think Proverbs, you think wisdom. And when we started the Proverbs, in chapter 1, Solomon begins the Proverbs by really addressing that these Proverbs, especially these first 9 chapters, are really addressed to 2 different groups of people. And those groups are basically the simple or the naive, and then the wise. And the simple and naive, the youth, were the ones that are to increase in learning and wisdom. And then the wise are the ones who are to increase in learning and wisdom as well, but increase in their already existing wisdom. Now, as we come to an end, what Solomon is going to do here in the final chapter of this section is Solomon is going to present a crossroads where the reader is finally forced to make a decision as to what they are going to do, whether or not they are going to accept wisdom or whether or not they are going to reject wisdom. And you have to make a choice by the end of this chapter, and it's intentionally written this way. And we know, of course, if someone is going to accept wisdom, there's something that has to happen first within their character. And we know this from chapter 1, verse 7, and chapter 9, verse 10 that we'll cover today. And that's the beginning of knowledge, and the beginning of wisdom is the fear of the Lord. That's right. So let's start by just looking at an overview of this chapter. And primarily, this chapter is going to be dealing with a comparison between 2 different personifications. Now, the first one we've seen several times, and that's Lady Wisdom personified. We saw it in chapter 1, we saw it in chapter 3, all of chapter 8 has Lady Wisdom personified. And it's also going to deal with not just wisdom personified, but folly or foolishness personified as a woman as well. And the contrast is going to be side by side, identical to each other. In this chapter, we're going to see that both women invite guests to their house, which is set in the high places, and both of them send out this invitation and invite those that are passing by and those that are invited to come and take part of this feast or this meal. And then both of them, depending on which invitation you accept, are going to result in 2 very different outcomes, as we've seen. And then there's this section, as we'll talk about, that's been debated about scholars. And some believe that it doesn't belong in this chapter, and that it originally had been somewhere else. And we're going to argue that it does belong here. And really what it is it's put right in the center between this comparison between personified wisdom and personified folly. And it's going to talk about these 2 different types of people, the one who is wise and the one who is a scoffer. Now, what's the difference between someone who is a scoffer and someone who is naive or simple? What's the difference? Okay, attitude. When you think scoffer, what do you think? Okay, an arguer. Yeah, go ahead. Okay, good. It's coming from this attitude of arrogance and rejection. And so what Solomon is doing here, as we're going to see, is you've had all this teaching up to this chapter on wisdom versus folly and wisdom versus foolishness, and now you're forced to make a choice. And your choice will lead you to being either one who accepts wisdom and becomes wise, or one who rejects wisdom and becomes a mocker or a scoffer. And you scoff at wisdom, as we saw in chapter 1. And we're going to see that the one who is a scoffer is the one who accepts folly's invitation because they don't fear the Lord, where the one who accepts wisdom's invitation is the one who does so because of their fear of the Lord. So let's just jump into the text and we'll go through this together. Beginning in verse 1, it says, "Wisdom has built her house, and she has hewn her 7 pillars. She has slaughtered her beast, and she has mixed her wine, and she has also set her table. And she has sent out her young women to call from the highest places in town. Whoever is simple, let him turn in here. And to him who lacks sense, she says, come, eat my bread and drink of the wine that I have mixed, and leave your simple ways and live and walk in a way of insight. So we begin with this picture of wisdom having this house that is set up on this high place. And what's interesting is this house is given somewhat of a description, and it says that she has hewn her seven pillars. Now, what's significant about the number seven when we read the scriptures?
Well, according to the Bible here, it says that it's an ideally constructed home.
Okay, an ideally constructed home. So it's the idea of something being complete or something being whole. You also have, if you think Revelation, what is the number that is associated with the true divine God? Yeah, 777, right? And so you have this same number that kind of appears in different places, but it's this idea of completeness. And perhaps this is even a commentary on the God of creation. She has hewn her seven pillars, just as the earth was established in 7 days. There's some debate amongst scholars as to what this might have meant to the audience at that point. But in either case, what we have presented is this grand feast. Now, I want you to remember the parable of the prodigal son. And when he came back home, what took place in the home of the father when the son came back home? Yeah, they had this huge feast, and he commanded for something specifically to be done. That's it, to kill the fatted calf. And Hewlin, you know more about this than I would, but this would have come at an extreme expense to that individual, to take your most prized calf or heifer. And Hewlin, I don't know what a prized heifer goes for nowadays, but...
They vary.
Okay.
The thing about a prized animal that's going to be used in this feast or this celebration would be one that is fed complete and where it would be at highest of tender and marbling and of greatest of flavor.
Okay, good. And so we have this idea of what's being painted here as this magnificent banquet. And though it doesn't seem important right now, it will be important when we look at woman folly, is all of this is coming at whose expense when you look at the language? Who's providing all of this? It's wisdom. It's her beasts that she slaughtered. It's her wine that she's mixed. And she has set her table. And so this is this grand banquet that she is putting on for the people. And now she sends out her maidens and sends them out to extend this invitation. And the invitation is sent out, you see, by these maidens. And that should remind us of the parable of the great banquet in Matthew 22, where the master sends out his servants to go and invite those that were to come to the wedding feast. And then you see the same thing. That's how Jesus spread his invitation of salvation. Matthew 28, he tells his disciples, go into all the world. He sends his servants out to declare and invite those to come into the messianic feast in the kingdom. And so you see the same thing here, and it says that they call from the highest places in town. And what's significant about that? We discussed this briefly last time, but what's significant about the highest places in town?
Usually where the temple or altars were there.
Okay, good. And Bruce said that's where the temples or the altars were. We mentioned this briefly last time. When you were going to go to Jerusalem, even if you're going south, you never said you were going down to Jerusalem. You said you were going up to Jerusalem because they wrote by way of when you look geographically at elevation. And so you would go up to Jerusalem because it was set on a high place. That's where the temple was. When Jeroboam set up false altars in Dan and Bethel, they were set up in the high places. And you can still see where the altar was standing in Dan today, by the way. Look that up. It's really interesting. But they call from the highest places in town. And this is to signify deity, especially when you combine it with this house that has these seven hewn pillars. Wisdom is signifying the Lord right here, calling from the highest places, this great banquet. And the invitation is to a particular group. Whoever is simple, let him turn in here. To him who lacks sense, she says, come eat of my bread and drink of the wine that I have mixed. Leave your simple ways and live and walk in the way of insight. And so this invitation is to the simple. And what she's saying is, no longer be simple. If you accept my invitation, what you're doing is you are accepting wisdom herself. Yeah, JC. That's right.
And even in these other religions, there's wisdom to be found that will bring you back to God.
Okay.
Was it Peter Paul? Peter.
Yeah.
That says, you know, I see you're very religious people. Now let me show you. So it shows that even from these other religions, you see that, oh, maybe there is something bigger. Maybe I need to look into this, and you end up coming back to wisdom.
Perfect. So that was Paul in Acts 17 when he was talking to the Athenians. So you had it right the first time there. And we're going to see that same principle with woman folly. She is also calling out from the high places. But what she is going to represent, especially in the language that's used, is an idolatrous temple where people would go to believe themselves to be doing that which is religious or that which is serving the gods, but in reality was only bringing them to death. We're going to see that in just a moment. And again, you see this meal that's being prepared for those that turn into her. And we're not going to allegorize this. It's just what it is. She's offering her bread and her wine that she's mixed, along with this fatted calf or this beast that she has killed. And really, this is an invitation of honor, is what it is. If you were invited to this kind of a feast, then you were an honored guest. And you would come and take part, and it was a celebration. And that's what's being portrayed here. It's this grand feast where those that are given an invitation are honored guests to come and dine with wisdom. And what's amazing is those who are invited. It's not those that are already wise, but it's those that are simple, those that are naive, that have not become a scoffer, or have not become a wise man. They're just simply uneducated. And so wisdom is calling out saying, listen to me and accept my invitation. And that's the picture that's painted for us here. All right, so any questions about the very first six verses? And we're just trying to set up a scenario. We're going to make more application at the end here. Any thoughts yet? Yeah, JC, go ahead. And so you have, and I'm trying to think of where you might go with that, but the idea of Christ inviting us, the language in the New Testament, not just inviting us to this banquet eternally, the messianic banquet that's written about, but to Jesus says, whoever does not eat my flesh and drink my blood cannot have a part of me, but he's asking for you to come. And it wasn't eating his physical flesh and drinking his blood, but he's saying, you need me. You need to take a part of me. And you see the same thing with wisdom here. Yeah.
And then it continues with believers in the way we live.
That's right.
The death. And then it's compared to the scoffers, which are those of us who hear the word and understand it and choose not to obey it and turn away from it, versus the simple who just simply need to know the word.
Right. Good. Bruce.
By simple ways, are they referring to just the naive of knowing God's word and way? So they're saying leave that and
every time we see simple in these section of Proverbs, it generally refers to one who does not yet fear the Lord. But there seems to be a disconnect between those who are simple and those who are scoffers. The simple-minded do not fear the Lord because they have not yet been instructed to fear the Lord. The scoffer has been instructed to fear the Lord and laughs at the Lord. And that's what we're going to see in the very next verse, is there's a distinct difference between the simple-minded and the scoffer. And look at the next verse and you'll see that. Because whether this is wisdom continuing to speak, for sure wisdom picks back up in verse 11 and 12. But some argue that this is like a narrator that comes in and speaks at this point, or whether this is wisdom, we don't know. But look at verse 7. As opposed to those she calls out to, which is the simple, verse 7 says, whoever corrects a scoffer gets himself abuse, and whoever reproves a wicked man incurs injury. Do not reprove a scoffer, or he will hate you. So this first section, verses 7 through 8a, are dealing with this person of the scoffer, and basically wisdom says, don't try to correct someone who is a scoffer, because what's the result that you are going to get by trying to correct someone who is a scoffer of wisdom or the Lord? Yeah, injury or harm, or they will hate you. Now that seems, at first we might say, now wait a second, because I thought we weren't supposed to prejudge people and we should extend wisdom's invitation and the Lord's invitation to whomever. Well, think about what Jesus said in Matthew 7. He said something very similar. He said, do not give to dogs what is holy, and do not throw your pearls before swine or pigs, lest they trample them underfoot and turn and attack you. You see this same kind of language used by the Lord, saying you need to have careful judgment as to how you walk amongst those that are among this attitude. And here the pig or the swine would be the scoffer that we read about in the Proverbs. And go ahead, Rochelle.
Even John the Baptist said to the Pharisees as they came to hear what it was that all the hubbub was about, he said, who told you to flee the repentance?
The wrath to come.
The wrath of God.
That's right.
You're not going to listen anyway.
Yeah. And
same thing.
And here's, we need to understand the reason why. Because it's similar to what we read in Hebrews chapter 6, where it says that after one has become enlightened and tasted and seen that the Lord is good, and then they fall away, what does the Hebrew writer say about them? That it is impossible to restore them to repentance. And the reason for this is the beginning of knowledge and the beginning of wisdom is the fear of the Lord. And if someone does not fear the Lord, then it does not matter what wisdom or knowledge you share with them, because to accept wisdom and knowledge, first you have to fear the Lord. Yeah, Wayne, go ahead.
You're in the verse 10.
We're getting there. We're about to.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead though. Okay.
I hate to use this word. Is it terror? You know, a fear like fear of a lion?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it reverence and awe that's being used in this particular verse?
Okay. This word that's used, and I did some look on that, it literally means terror. And when it's the same word that's used when it says that the appearance of God, like in an angel, or when God appeared to someone, and it says they fell down on their face in fear, it's that same concept, that same word that's being used, where someone was overwhelmed by the presence of God. And I really think you have to have both aspects. There's been this debate that No, it doesn't mean to be afraid, because after all, why should we be afraid of a loving and gracious God? And perfect love casts out fear. And so it just means respect. And then you have the other side that says, no, fear means to be afraid and to fall down on the face. Well, when we talk about the fear of the Lord, Solomon's, you know, conclusion at the end of Ecclesiastes was to fear God and keep his commandments. The whole duty of man. And when you think about it this way, remember when Israel was at the foot of Mount Sinai and the Lord spoke, what did they say to Moses? What did they ask of Moses regarding God? They said, tell God not to talk anymore, because we all think that we are going to die. There is a healthy level of fear that we must have, an understanding that we are in the presence of an almighty God. And that fear should motivate us to the proper reverence and respect for God that we ought to have. And yes, there is perfect love through Christ that casts out fear of impending judgment, but we should never become so unfearful of God that we don't realize that the people that God is going to judge first are His people. And so we have got to keep this proper and maintain this proper attitude of both terror and reverence before God. And that's my basic take when I understand the scriptures and how you see especially how Israel models our relationship should be towards God. Because the text here, and I'll get to you in just a second, the text here is going to compare the fear of the Lord with knowledge of the Holy One. And what was Israel condemned for? My people perish for lack of knowledge. They didn't fear the Lord. There was no reverence, and there was also no terror. When the prophet said, you're going to be judged and you're going to die, how did they respond? They didn't do anything. They actually, when you look at some of the Psalms, they considered that God would be like them, is what the psalmists write. That God would actually not fulfill His end of the bargain and bring judgment, just like they had not fulfilled their end of the bargain and done all that the Lord had commanded as they were entered into the covenant at the foot of Mount Sinai by the blood. And so there was no fear of the Lord, and I think it's both those aspects. Yeah, Mom. Okay.
I was afraid of my father. If I was doing things right, I had a very, you know, extreme respect for him. If I was doing things wrong, I was terrified.
Okay.
And it's both sides of the same coin. Both pieces go together and they really can't be separated.
Good, good. And that's really the biblical view of this term, okay? So those that don't fear the Lord, that's why they're a scoffer. They hear of the impending judgment and the calls of wisdom to turn in or else there's going to be death. And what do? They scoff at it and they mock it. And that was chapter 1. But then when calamity struck, then who did they call out to? Then they called out to wisdom. By then it was too late. And there was nothing that could be done. And the Proverbs speak a lot about the scoffer. The different words are used, but it's describing the same individual. And we didn't put it all up here, but Proverbs 3:44 talks about that the Lord scoffs at the scoffer. And it's the kind of the language of Galatians 6. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. You can't scoff God, because God will be the one that gets the last word. Proverbs 13:1, the scoffer does not listen to his father. 14:6, cannot find wisdom even if they look for it. Now that makes sense, because before you find wisdom, what do you have to do? Fear God. 15:2, does not love the one who reproves him. 19:29, judgment and punishment for scoffers is held against them. 20 in verse 1, wine is actually called a scoffer. 19:25 and 21:11, punishment of the scoffer serves as a lesson to the simple to accept wisdom's invitation and not folly's. 21:24, scoffers are arrogant. 22:10, scoffers cause strife and need driven out. And most prominent, 24:9, says scoffers are an abomination before the Lord. And you don't see that word used very often in the Old Testament. But the scoffer is an abomination before the Lord. And so you see a disconnect there from the simple and the scoffer. The scoffer is one who does not fear the Lord, who has heard wisdom's call and has rejected the fear of the Lord and has rejected wisdom and celebrates their immorality. It's kind of like in Romans 1, they know that those who do such things deserve to die, but they not only do them, but get hearty approval to those who practice them. That's the attitude of a scoffer. They know better, and they don't care, and they accept those who transgress God and mock God in their doing so. That's the attitude of a scoffer. Jack, did you have your hand up? Okay. Go ahead and look, though, at the next section, though. Verses 8 and 9, 8b. Though the scoffer will hate you for reproving him because he loves his darkness. That's why when Jesus says that they hated the light because their works were darkness, their works were evil. The wicked man will hate you for exposing evil deeds. But the wise man, because he fears the Lord, because he loves wisdom, if you reprove him, guess what he will do though? He's going to love you. And that separates oftentimes our youth. And just hear me for a moment. When we wonder why some young people end up leaving the church and going away and some end up staying, this is why this chapter in and of itself is so important and why you need to teach Proverbs to young people. Because if you are willing to accept correction and fear the Lord and humble yourself and accept correction and actually embrace it and love those who love you enough to correct you and to encourage you, then you are going to become one who is wise. You will increase in your fear of the Lord. But if you develop this attitude that if you correct me, then I hate you for it because you're judging me, isn't that the mantra of a lot of youth today? What do they say? Only God can judge me. And what they mean by that is, don't you ever correct me, because if you do, you are violating my rights. That's the attitude of a scoffer. And it's amazing, I shared this earlier, Keith Stonehart had posted this, correction is perceived as judgment by those who still love their sin. And that's really the truth of the matter. And that's the separation here, is you have two different kinds of people, and it all hinges on whether one fears the Lord, as we're about to see. You will either love because you want to be in a right relationship with the Lord, and because you fear Him, you will either love wisdom and accept correction so as to grow, or because you do not fear the Lord, you will reject wisdom and become one who actually scoffs at those who try to encourage you and reprove you. The wise man, though, you give instruction to him and he will still be wiser. And here's the idea connected to the fear of the Lord. The wise man is paralleled with the righteous man. And he is the one who will increase in learning. All right, now let's talk about, I forgot about this, the wise man. The wise man loves wisdom. We saw that in 8:13 and 8:17. He hates evil and he loves wisdom. Now let's talk about the fear of the Lord for a second. Now I spent all of Monday reading about chiastic structures of Hebrew poetry, and I don't know anything more about it than I did at the beginning of Monday, but let me basically tell you what I know. And within the Proverbs, and especially within the Psalms, because it's poetry, and we don't see it because we're not reading it in the Hebrew, it's hard to follow, but there's a very specific time and meter and rhythm that is set to these poems. And the way that they're constructed, if it has a chiastic structure, is oftentimes the main point of the proverb or the main point of the psalm is in the exact center. For example, in Proverbs 31, we all think that Proverbs 31 is about who when we read it? the godly woman. But when you actually look at the chiastic structure, the center of that proverb is that her husband is well known in the gates. And what's really interesting is the whole proverb, then the meaning shifts and it demonstrates how this wife fulfills her role and her purpose in being the greatest helper that she can for this man. And it's really interesting, the implications behind it. So when you look at Proverbs 9, the fear of the Lord is not only the center of verses 7 through 12, which is kind of its own section in talking about the two different people, the one who either accepts wisdom's invitation and becomes wise, or the one who accepts folly's invitation and becomes the scoffer. The difference maker between that is the fear of the Lord, but also it's the center of the entire chapter, where 1 through 9 are dealing with wisdom's feast, and 13 through 18 are dealing with folly's feast. Right in the center is this section on the fear of the Lord. And if you were a Hebrew and you loved poetry and you read this and someone walked up to you and said, what's the point of Proverbs 9? You would say, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. That's the purpose, the point of this whole section for us to understand. That's what Solomon is trying to instill in his children. And that's my very bad explanation of chiastic structure. That is very limited knowledge of Hebrew poetry. I should have taken Hebrew, and then I probably could have told you a little more. But anyway, verses 10 through 12, again, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is insight. That is so important that those are paralleled next to each other. The fear of the Lord is equated with knowing the Lord. And I would argue that if you don't properly fear the Lord, then you will never properly know the Lord. But if you really know the Lord, here's the inverse, then you will truly fear the Lord. And that's the difference. That's why Israel was destroyed for lack of knowledge, because if they really knew the Lord, then they would have feared Him in their life, and they would have kept His commandments. And isn't that what John writes? In 1 John chapter 2, by this we know that we have come to know Him, if we what? If we keep His commandments. Why? Because you will properly fear the Lord. That's the same conclusion that John comes to is what Solomon's conclusion was a couple thousand years before. Is that here, the end of the matter is to fear God and keep His commandments. John says, you want to know how you know the Lord or fear God? It's if you keep His commandments. The same conclusion is come to by two different men, both given the gift of the Spirit, I would argue. Wisdom is going to pick back up in speaking in verse 11, because it says, for by me, now some have argued that's the Lord, but it doesn't particularly matter, because if it's wisdom speaking, it still matters about the Lord, because the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So whether it's wisdom or the Lord, I argue wisdom. Wisdom says, by me your days will be multiplied and your years will be added to your life. Have we seen wisdom personified say this before in the Proverbs? It's the same message. Now here's the end matter, verse 12, before we get into Lady Folly. If you're wise, you are wise for yourself. But if you scoff, you alone will bear it. Here's the point. If you're wise, this is to your greatest benefit. You're wise for yourself. It's kind of like Peter's words in Acts 2. He said, save yourselves from this crooked generation. And those who heard his words were baptized into Christ. And so here, the wisdom is saying, if you're wise, if you accept my invitation, it is to your greatest benefit. It is for your life. But if you scoff, if you reject me, I am not going to be there when you call out for me. You are going to be alone when you bear it. Go back real quick to chapter 1. That's the whole message about the scoffer in chapter 1, is that the scoffer scoffs at wisdom. calamity strikes, the scoffer cries out, but they will not find wisdom. In verse 29, notice the comparison from 9:10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Knowledge of the Holy One is insight. Chapter 1, verse 29. Why will wisdom not answer them? Verse 29, because they hated knowledge and did not choose to fear the Lord. They had made the choice, I will not fear the Lord, and I will reject the wisdom of the Lord. And in fact, verse 30, I will have none of his counsel and despise all of his reproof. And so the answer, they are going to be alone. Verse 31, therefore they shall eat the fruit of their way and have their fill of their own devices. For the simple are killed by their turning away, and the complacency of fools destroys them. The same message from chapter 1 is being repeated here at chapter 9, but here the reader is forced to make a choice. There is two invitations, folly or wisdom. Who are you going to listen to? If you listen to wisdom, you'll become wise and it results in life. And that comes from a fear of the Lord. But if you reject the fear of the Lord and you accept wisdom's invitation, this is going to be your end. The woman folly is loud. She is seductive and knows nothing. All right, immediately, this language should remind us of someone else that has been described over and over again in the Proverbs. What's that? The prostitute or the strange woman. What's interesting is you haven't seen folly personified up to this point, but you have seen reflections of her character when talking about the adulterous woman over and over again, whether it is in chapter 2, chapter 5, chapter 6, chapter 7, and here in chapter 9. And here, this woman folly is going to be a parody of wisdom and is a representative of Satan's work. But here, there's almost this picture of a temple prostitute. And I'll bring that out in just a moment. But notice the language. She's loud, which is what is said of the adulterous woman in chapter 7. She's seductive. She knows nothing. That's straight from chapter 7, talking about the strange woman. Verse 14. She sits at the door of her house, and she takes a seat on the highest places of town. Exactly what JC was saying earlier. The highest places weren't just where the Lord Yahweh had his temple, but idolatrous temples were also set up in the high places where people would go to worship their idolatrous gods. And if you know anything about idolatrous worship, what was one of the main sinful activities that took place within pagan temples? There was orgies and all sorts of, the priestesses were temple prostitutes. And that's kind of the picture that is painted here, especially with the language of the meal that she offers. But here she sits at the door of her house. She takes her seat in the high places, calling to those who pass by and are going straight on their way. Notice what's interesting here. There's not specific invitations sent out, but just anyone that happens to pass by, she's trying to call. Whether they're already walking straight or whether they happen to be passing by, it reminds us of the language of Ezekiel chapter 16 and verse 15, where Israel is condemned for whoring herself to all of the nations, and it says that she would spread her legs before every passerby. And that's the same language that's being used here, is every passerby, she's trying to engage, and she's trying to bring into herself. It's a trap. And notice who she calls to. Verse 16. Whoever is simple, let him turn in here, and him who lacks sense. That is identical to those who wisdom is calling out to. And there's a lesson here. Those whom the Lord is after and those whom Satan is after are the exact same target audience. We are in a spiritual battle over our souls. And here, wisdom is calling out before to try to call out to the simple so that way they might become wise so as to save them. so as to honor them so that way they might live. And yet the woman folly is calling out to them so that she might lie to them to keep them simple, to make them the scoffer, that they might result in death. Because look what her invitation is. Woman wisdom, lady wisdom, was killing this fatted calf in this grand feast, and it was this great expense on her part to honor her guests with mixed wine and bread. And look what woman folly offers. She says, stolen water is sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. What is she offering to her guests to eat in this meal? It's not hers. It's something that doesn't even belong to her. It is stolen, and the whole purpose behind this is not mine, this is wrong, but it's pleasant. And that's the appeal. Now, let's think about how Satan works for a moment. Promising immediate pleasure despite its eternal destruction. Isn't that what James talked about? That desire, when it is conceived, brings forth sin, and when sin, when it is fully grown, brings forth death. And the appeal here is this enticement, just like the adulterous woman. And in fact, the language is very similar to that of the adulterous woman, saying, my husband is gone at the time of night, which is in secret. Come in to me that we may fill ourselves with delight. This promise of immediate pleasure, and yet we learn from chapter 5, but a man's ways are before the eyes of the Lord. Nothing is really done in secret. It is all before the Lord. And those who accept her invitation do not know that the dead are there and her guests are in the depths of Sheol. I have a really weird illustration. Anyone a Lord of the Rings fan? I'm a huge Lord of the Rings fan. Remember, and if you've never seen the movie, I'll describe it. They're trying to figure out a way to go around the mountain, and so they decide they're going to go under it through the mines of Moria. And Gimli is absolutely certain that when they arrive, they are going to be greeted with pomp and with pride and with this great feast. And as soon as they walk in, they look around and they realize that it is no longer a mine where they'd be honored with glory and with food and with feasting, but everyone there was dead. And there was just skeletons everywhere. And they had walked into a tomb, is where they had walked into. And Tolkien was a believer, and he writes a lot of biblical things. And I don't know if this is what he had in mind, but it sure fits what takes place here. The person who listens to woman folly, who rejects wisdom, who doesn't fear the Lord, who follows their pleasures and engages in that which they should not, despite its immediate gratification it might have, what they don't realize is that they're eating poison, and that they are killing themselves by their actions. And they do not know, when they walk into this house preparing to see this great feast, everyone who sits around the table is dead. And that's where they will remain forever. This is a permanent invitation on both sides. And this is what the reader is having to choose at this crossroad. You will either forever, if you fear the Lord, have life and honor and this prosperity with wisdom, an eternal setting of banqueting with the Lord. Or if you reject the fear of the Lord, then you will forever only have death, and it will be brought upon yourself, and you will be lost with the dead forever. And that's the end of this section of Proverbs. Choose this day whom you're going to serve, so to speak, Joshua would say. I wanted to say Jeremiah. I'm like, that's not right. Wrong J word. There's too many J's in the Bible. as Joshua would say. And so the appeal tonight is really, and we didn't, there's a lot of more notes. We didn't have time to go through them all. I'd encourage you to read your notes. There's a lot more applications and things to think about. But I just want to ask you, you know, tonight, use this application and use it with your children. Choose what you're going to do right now. Are you going to fear the Lord and become wise and have life? Or are you going to reject the fear of the Lord, reject knowledge, reject instruction, and you alone will have to bear it when the end comes? That's the class, and that's Proverbs 1 through 9. So, any last thoughts or questions? Yeah, Wayne.
Well done.
Thanks, brother. All right.